It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
If you cross the border illegally, you should be able to be sent back. It's a crime.
Please, your response. First of all, Mr. Vice President, it looks like one of us has learned the lessons of the past and one of us hasn't.
Now, Senator Harris says she's proud of her record as a prosecutor. She put over 1,500 people in jail for marijuana violations and then laughed about it when she was asked if she ever smoked marijuana.
I know the firsthand terrific impact of climate change on Americans. We have to act now.
What did you mean when you said when a woman works outside the home, it's resulting in, quote, the deterioration of family?
No.
And that we are avoiding, these are quotes, it was the title of the op-ed.
We need to do the opposite of much of what we're doing right now and the opposite of Donald Trump. Is an Asian man who likes math.
So the first thing that I'm going to do when I'm president is I'm going to Clorox the Oval Office.
Would I insist that labor be engaged? The answer is yes.
I consider that a victory.
Well, I love your affection for me. You spent a lot of time with me.
Mr. Vice President, there's a saying in my community, you're dipping into the Kool-Aid and you don't even know the flavor.
Yeah, so that was the flavor of last night's second Democratic debate in Detroit. There were 10 of them on the stage, and they all went after Joe Biden. From all accounts, Joe fought some, but was muddled, confused, would stop talking, and just was not able to hold his own. So I don't know, you know, what the polls will show. The other part of this is that sometimes Joe Biden made more sense than the others, certainly on immigration. He sort of fought that there should be some, it's illegal to cross our border. People should be stopped. He did try to make that point, but of course the rest of them did not agree with him. So they went after Joe Biden, and it was pretty much all no plan for the future, just criticizing, just trying to tear down, interestingly enough, trying to tear down Obamacare, even though they didn't say that by name, because they want to move to Medicare for all, which of course is ridiculous and untenable. Can you imagine if we tried to cover every American and every non-citizen? Pay for every medical procedure that they need, every doctor visit, and plus their dental work, all of it free. Of course, they say they're going to do this by millionaires. You know, Elizabeth Warren tells us Mayor de Blasio last night said we were going to, I don't think he used the word rob, but we're gonna strip the billionaires of their resources. We're going to take their money. I interestingly got an information from someone who did some research, and this is what it says. I totaled all the net worth of the billionaires in this country, American citizens, in an Excel sheet. And the total is $2.399 trillion, which is the assessed value of all of their assets, not just their income. And that total is just a little over half of the U.S. budget of about $4.5 trillion. So even if you liquidated all the billionaires' assets at full asset value, you could only run our government for 6.4 months. Elizabeth Warren and the other Democrats promised to fund their multi-trillion dollar socialist schemes by taxing billionaires, but they once again are counting on people's ignorance of the issue and lack of math comprehension. There simply aren't enough rich billionaires. And of course, Tulsi Gabbard then, you know, Kamala Harris went after Joe Biden in the last debate, not the one last 2 nights ago, but the last set of Democratic debates. And Kamala was heralded as the victor in that debate because she pretty much humiliated Joe Biden over the issue of busing and other things, and she was pretty proud of herself. So Tulsi Gabbard went after her last night. I think this is clip 9. Let's listen.
Vice President Biden, you're just simply inaccurate in what you're describing.
If we can't admit tonight what's in the plan, which is banning employer-based insurance.
I don't understand why Democrats on this stage are fear-mongering about universal health care.
I don't know what math you do in New York.
I don't know what math you do earlier with California, but I tell you, that's a lot of money.
I believe that we in the United States Congress should start impeachment proceedings immediately.
Not only have we not gone after al-Qaeda, who is stronger today than they were in 9/11, our president is supporting al-Qaeda.
What we need are politicians that actually have some guts on this issue.
I have guts enough to say his plan doesn't make sense.
She put over 1,500 people in jail for marijuana violations and then laughed about it when she was asked if she ever smoked marijuana.
And I am proud of making a decision to not just give fancy speeches or be in a legislative body and give speeches on the floor, but actually doing the work.
The person that's enjoying this debate most right now is Donald Trump as we pit Democrats against each other.
We cannot tear each other down. We have to focus on beating Donald Trump in 2020.
All right, so that wasn't exactly what I expected, but you did hear, if you caught it, Tulsi Gabbard was ripping Kamala Harris. She basically said, Senator Harris says she's proud of her record as a prosecutor and that she'll be a prosecutor president, but I'm deeply concerned about this record. There are too many examples to cite, but she put over 1,500 people in jail for marijuana violations and then laughed about it when she was asked if she ever smoked marijuana. That's true because I remember that moment when she laughed. So Tulsi took Kamala Harris down a few pegs, and I think a lot of people that are all about criminal justice reform and letting criminals out on the street, which I have not even addressed recently because that's already started, are concerned about Kamala Harris's tough record on crime. Isn't that interesting? It's all twisted. It really doesn't matter what they've done. They don't, you know, that I think particularly, and a lot of politicians are this way on the left and not principled people on the right, but non-principled ones, they change their positions often. John McCain did that all the time. Whenever he started to run for senator in Arizona, he was always pro the border, pro, you know, stopping illegal immigration. I was just amazed at how convincing he was, and he would get elected and do nothing. He did the opposite. Mitch McConnell's the same way. We'll repeal Obamacare root and branch. And then he didn't. Over and over and over again, he failed to do it. So you see, it's kind of a disease on both sides. So the Democrats on the stage last night, I don't think, for the most part, they're principled people. You know, they may be, maybe they're principled. They certainly are principled when it comes to abortion for all 9 months for any reason. And I guess they are principled when it comes to legalizing illegal immigration and giving every benefit and advantage to people coming across the border. They certainly seem to be in favor of that. As a matter of fact, let's just listen a little bit to what they had to say about illegal immigration. This is clip 12.
Open borders is a right-wing talking point. And frankly, I'm disappointed that some folks, including some folks on this stage, have taken the bait.
The secretary, we sat together in many meetings. I never heard him talk about any of this when he was the secretary.
Well, Mr. Vice President, it looks like one of us has learned the lessons of the past and one of us hasn't.
Esther,
what we need
you.
Are politicians that actually have some guts on this issue.
I have guts enough to say his plan doesn't make sense.
No, Mr. Vice President, we are not going to just let people cross the border. An unlawful crossing is an unlawful crossing.
This country can tolerate a heck of a lot more people. And the reason we're the country we are is we've been able to cherry pick from the best of every culture.
The policies of this administration have been facilitated by laws on the book
you,
that
Senator.
Allow them to be incarcerated as though they've committed crimes.
Thank
These
you, Senator.
Children have not
Thank
committed
you,
crimes
Harris.
And should be not treated like criminals.
Senator Bennett, what's your response?
Yeah, so, yeah, and so it goes. And we heard that Monday or Tuesday night also. This constant defense of illegal immigrants and an ignoring of American citizens. I've made that point so many times. I want to jump in on that for a second and say, you know, the actress Alyssa Milano, I think she did this on Instagram. She waxed eloquent about the treatment of illegal immigrants at the border. Let's listen to a bit of that because I want to put this in perspective. Alyssa, of course, would be on the side of the people on stage last night about quite stop criminalizing it and these they need more help, and how dare we do that? So Alyssa, but puts the tears to it, is clip 5.
So I just watched this video of a baby being reunited with her mom. Ted Lieu had Border Patrol officials watch footage of what separation is doing to families. And I watched the video, and I'm going to post the video in this thread after I'm done. So please, please watch the video with the sound up.
All right, that's enough. Yeah, I mean, you get the point of it, and she goes on and on. And of course, you know, if I saw the video, I'd probably, my heart would be broken too. That is not the point. The point is there are other victims here who are Americans. And I think Marianne Mendoza, who I've interviewed, I've had the privilege of interviewing, lost her son, Brandon. He was killed by an illegal alien. And Marianne is just pretty upset with Alyssa Milano and the other Democrats. She said, in regard to Alyssa, the amount of children who are being trafficked is no concern of hers. She shared, I just watched this video. Oh, you heard Alyssa. She's repeating what Alyssa had to say. We can't let this be the new normal. The percentage of trafficked children is so much higher than those separated. Thank goodness our Border Patrol men and women are aware of this and are helping those children whom Alyssa has never mentioned. And then again, her son Brandon was killed by a drunken illegal alien in 2014 and said that Alyssa Milano, and I'm sure none of the others, have ever spoken out in sympathy with the death of her U.S.-born citizen child being victimized by an illegal immigrant. You can't be concerned for a handful being separated for a short time as things are sorted out and not be concerned for the sexually abused, recycled children flooding our borders, arriving with men and women with ill intentions. Alyssa is a hypocrite and is doing this to further incite hatred towards our president. If she's truly concerned about the children, fight for the American children being raped by illegal aliens in our country. Put your boots on and leave your home and go work at the borders with our Border Patrol agents for a week. By the way, Maria Mendoza, Marianne Mendoza, has had her Twitter account suspended for violating the rules. They call it hateful content. This is what she had written. This is the reason they suspended her account. Speaker Pelosi, Americans are torn apart every hour by illegal alien criminals. Every hour. Another one reads, meanwhile, 4,300 Americans are killed every year by illegal aliens in the U.S. What do you have to say about that? Another one reads, Congressman Joe Kennedy, heaven forbid one of those unvetted fighting age men gets released and harms or kills someone you love. I know firsthand what one illegal alien criminal can do to devastate a family. Look my son in the eye and tell him you're sorry for contributing to his death. So they suspended her account, and that's what's happening to people who are trying to speak out about that. So there was no word last night, again, on that stage about any Americans who are victimized by, and that's, it's death and crime, it's drugs, it's stealing of, identity, it's taking jobs. It's crowding hospital emergency rooms. It's crowding schools so the teachers cannot even teach American children because they have to deal with the lack of training, the lack of westernization, a civilization in these children from third world countries. And so your children are not being taught, but illegal immigrant children are being managed. I would say that's probably the best we can say, and there's probably some exceptions of that. But that yes, I'm upset about that. And I talk about it a lot and will continue to. Let me see if I can find one more clip for you to listen to last night. Let's just say Medicare for All, the promise, of course, of covering everything. Clip 14.
Obamacare is working.
Your plan does not cover everyone in America by your staff's and your own definition.
And to be very blunt and to be very straightforward, you can't beat President Trump with double talk on this plan.
Vice President Biden, you're just simply inaccurate in what you're describing.
The person that's enjoying this debate most right now is Donald Trump, as we pit Democrats against each other while he is working right now to take away Americans' health care.
Yeah, I don't understand why Democrats on this stage are fear-mongering about universal health care. It makes no sense.
We cannot keep with the Republican talking points on this. You gotta stop.
This is not a Republican talking point. The Republicans are trying to kill Obamacare. This idea is a bunch of malarkey.
I guess if you want to get, you want to get out the Alka-Seltzer, you could stay with the haranguing and the complaining. It's amazing to me that they can't find anything good about America. Nothing. It's just harping and carping. Victor Davis Hanson has a really good piece and on Fox News that I want to talk about when I return. But also, there's so much more news, stuff breaking on the Mueller-Comey situation. So please stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The Ministry of Preborn meets abortion-minded women right where they are. When a young mom sees her baby on ultrasound, she's 80% more likely to keep her baby.
And I got to hear and see my baby for the first time. Hearing the heartbeat made me cry, and it was certain that I was going to keep my baby forever.
This mom chose life for her baby.
She's been such a joy. Her name even means rebirth and sort of being raised up from the ashes. I now see my daughter, and I cannot imagine my life without my happy, lovely, joyful, smart baby, and I'm so grateful.
Preborn runs and leads Christian pregnancy centers all over the country. To find out more, go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com. Or dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 and say baby. Your love can save a life.
A Moment of Truth with Gary Bryden of the Association of Independent Methodists.
When listening to Steve Saint give his testimony recently, I was awestruck when he told of his baptism and that of his sisters. He and they were in Ecuador in the Wadani village that his father was seeking to reach and that his Aunt Rachel and Elizabeth Elliott did reach with the gospel. He said his sisters went to the river and were baptized, the same river in which his father's body was thrown after being speared, by the very same people that speared his father and the other four missionaries. Only Jesus can transform lives like that. Only God can forgive hearts like that. Why not let Jesus transform your heart today?
The Association of Independent Methodists, like-minded congregations doing together what can't be done separately. Visit aim2020.com.
This is Pause to Pray, a chance each day to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today, we pray for Robert Redfield, director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. His agency's goal is to protect public health and safety through the control and prevention of disease, injury, and disability. Jeremiah 33:6 reminds us of the Lord's blessings of good health. Behold, I will bring to it health and healing, and I will heal them and reveal to them an abundance of prosperity and security. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Almighty God, we ask for wisdom for Robert Redfield as he works to keep the people of our country safe and healthy. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team, a nonprofit, nonpartisan ministry dedicated to encouraging prayer for our nation's leaders. To learn more, go to pausetopray.org.
Fox News Commentary with Todd Starnes.
Hello, Americans. A Montana senator has a warning about socialism. That story next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Paul Kizito. I'm a junior biology major here at Truett McConnell, and I came from Uganda. What I love about TMU is number one is the heart of, you know, of just the school and the love for God, for Christ. You can see it once you step on the campus. Like, you can see it's best, like, the foundation for TMU is Christianity.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
Montana Senator Steve Daines introduced a resolution condemning socialism the other day. It's hard to imagine we would be at a place in American history when such a resolution would be necessary, but here we are at a crossroads, and in the 2020 presidential election, Americans will choose a path, freedom or government control. Senator Daines says we are at a pivotal time in history. 54% of voters say moving from capitalism to socialism would be a bad thing, but among Democrats, a majority, 53%, say socialism is better than capitalism. Senator Daines says if the nation embraces socialism, it will lead to complete government control. He says the Constitution and the American way of life will be undermined. So pay attention, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes.
That's your Fox News commentary.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Today is the final nail in the coffin. The Tea Party is no more. The budget deal today allows unlimited borrowing for nearly 2 years. It abolishes all spending caps. Adoption of this deal marks the death of the Tea Party movement in America. The national debt now stands at $22 trillion. This year we will add over $1.2 trillion. We're approaching record deficits. And neither party cares. The media says, oh, there's not enough compromise in Washington. exactly the opposite of the truth. There's too much compromise in Washington. There's always an agreement to spend more money. They increase the debt for different reasons, but the only way they get theirs, give me mine, give me mine. That's what both sides say. What happened to the Tea Party movement, which was bipartisan and was concerned citizens rising up and saying, I don't want something from government. What I want is a government that is responsible. But before we make this about Republicans, remember that there's not a Democrat in Washington that cares about the debt. The difference between the parties are the Democrats are honest. They are very honest. They don't care about the debt. Both parties are bad. Both parties are ruining our country. Today, I will offer an alternative. We will raise the debt ceiling if you adopt in advance significant spending cuts, caps on spending, and a balanced budget amendment to the Constitution. Cut, cap, and balance is a responsible way to raise the debt ceiling by cutting spending, capping spending, and also balance a balanced budget amendment to the Constitution. I hope my colleagues will consider that.
That was Senator Rand Paul, and of course he's spot on. He's spot on. And the Republican leadership is just as guilty as the Democrats, and he's right. At least the Democrats are honest about it. They don't care about spending, and they don't care about debt, and they don't care about plunging the United States into an abyss of debt. They just have no concern about it. But the Republicans, at least the leadership, don't either. And so today the Senate is scheduled to vote on that $22 trillion in debt. They're voting now to lift the spending caps. It means for until 2022, there'll be no restrictions. There will be no restrictions. And guess who's running the House right now? And they're the ones that hold the purse strings. We've talked at length about this, but I'm just telling you, this really is a disaster. And while these debates are going on, honestly, I'm not going to say much more about the debates because there's so much more news. And this is one of the big issues. This is like that's just like a smokescreen. The election is far enough off. There'll be debates in the fall, and then we'll be down to like a manageable amount of candidates, and we can actually talk about it. You get the gist of what they're pushing. One thing is more spending, and so this is what I suggest. I suggest you call your senator today and tell them do not vote for that budget bill. We are watching what you do, and we are watching 2020. And there will be consequences. And I think there should be consequences. And the people, the men, and I don't even know if there are any women standing against this. I don't. But I know there are lots of conservative men in the House and also in the Senate, a handful in the Senate who are fighting against this. And so they need your support. Encouragement. Maybe call them. I wish I could have a list. I'm sure it's Tom Cotton and Mike Lee. I'm just off the top of my head. Ted Cruz, Rand Paul, and I'm not sure who else. But they're holding fast, and they need to be encouraged because they're really fighting. They're fighting for us. So call your senators and make your message appropriate. We put a great article yesterday from Rachel Brovard on what that, I think it was yesterday, maybe the day before, on what that debt means. And so you can find it on there. Maybe we should repost it, and then you can find it easily. I can't think of a nice name, so I got to be nice. It's like a dream come true for Democrats, this bill. Just is. And the president has been persuaded to vote on it. to sign it. And so I think he's going to do that, which is really unfortunate. And so there you go. There's a lot more news that I want to get into, things that are unfolding with this Mueller investigation, the IG, the investigation into Comey. And I want to tell you about that, but let's start it by letting Sean Hannity kind of lay out at least a part of it. Here it is.
Mr. Super Patriot himself, Jim Comey, our friends at Judicial Watch have just obtained some very compelling documents. Little old Jimbo. Well, that he probably doesn't want you to see or to know about. As it turns out, in June of 2017, 1 month after Comey was fired, well, the FBI, people that he used to be the boss of, agents showed up at his door. Why didn't we find this out sooner? They were there to retrieve his classified government memos that he was storing in his home, which is illegal. The agents also grilled Comey about the documents during an interview. By the way, that would be called an interrogation for the rest of the world. And keep in mind, these are the very same memos about his confidential communications with the President of the United States. Comey leaked those to the media through a professor friend of his at Columbia for the purpose of spurring a special counsel investigation. Now, Mr. Super Patriot Comey never should have had those documents at his house. And oh yeah, leaking classified material is a crime. Now, I don't think this is his biggest crime, in my humble opinion. I've told Super Patriot Jim Comey many times before. I'll say it again tonight. Jim, you have the right to remain silent. My advice now more than ever, you need to shut up.
All right. So that was okay, Sean editorializing last night. But honestly, this is what's happened. And see, a lot of information is being released right now. And that's why I think these debates, which are already scheduled, I'm not saying they were scheduled to obfuscate this, but maybe the release of the documents was scheduled to be obfuscated. I'm not sure. I don't trust hardly anything anymore. But what Sean did not explain that I want to explain to you is that it appears that James Comey, of course, wrote memos every time he was with the president. He sort of indicated, sort of wanted, hinted at it being, because the president was so unstable and untrustworthy and possibly a Russian agent. He's inferring this. You know, I had to be careful and watch my back and make sure I wrote everything down. But when an FBI agent records something, anything, it is FBI property. So James Comey took his memos back to his apartment and actually transmitted them over regular email. And they are classified, which that's a crime. That is certainly a crime for an FBI agent to do that. You don't take classified information back to your home, and you certainly don't transfer it through regular channels. That's why, to the nines or to the 10th degree, that's what Mrs. Clinton did, only much more serious charges. Okay, so but here's the wrinkle that I think needs to be explained. Comey appeared before the Senate Select Intelligence Committee on June the 8th of 2017. The agents that Sean just mentioned who visited Comey's home to ask him about the memos and actually take the memos came the day before, June the 7th. We think those agents were Peter Strzok and Joe Pientka, and they were the lead FBI agents. And we think that those agents probably transferred those memos to Bob Mueller's team. And they just happened to do it, take them over, confiscate them, lift them from James Comey the day before he was to testify before that Senate committee. Now, some people feel very strongly that this was on purpose so that no one could get hold of those memos, that this was all a cooperative effort. I don't have any reason to think that's not true. In fact, I'll read this. This is from, again, Sundance, who I often quote. It was during this June 8th Senate Intelligence Committee meeting where Comey first revealed the scope of his memo keeping. Keep in mind, all prior research shows that Senate Select Committee on Intelligence Chairman Richard Burr and Vice Chair Mark Warner were part of the corrupt effort against President Trump. Their committee was where leaker James Wolf, who was sleeping with journalist Ali Watkins, was operational. And I mentioned this to you yesterday without mentioning names. I told you the chief of staff for the Senate Intelligence Committee was convicted of sharing the top secret intelligence of our country with this one reporter, and I believe there were other charges too. I know there were tons of charges. They actually let him get off very easily, which is something none of us really quite comprehend. But that committee is corrupt, and it's led by none other than Richard Burr and Mark Warner. And you remember, they have, from the very beginning, covered this story about Russian interference, about the intelligence agencies all agreeing, these 18 intelligence agencies agreeing, that Russia hacked our election and all of this. They have been the echo chamber for that and helped a lot. That's what they were doing. So to further Sundance's theory on this, by taking custody of the memos, the Mueller investigative team would be able to block any outside inquiry. That's the motive for the FBI visit to James Comey on June 7th. Comey could then talk about the memos the next day while knowing that what Sundance calls the small group, and I think the insiders called it that too, the insiders, would use the ongoing investigation to keep them hidden from review. Senators Mark Warner, Richard Burr, and the media would be able to frame the discussion of the memos to undermine President Trump while knowing the memos would be kept out of public review. With hindsight, and going back to a review of the SSCI testimony from Comey, this approach appears to have been pre-planned. And then he goes on to talk about, this is probably something you're not familiar with. David Archie was the lead FBI agent who took over Peter Strzok's duties when he was fired. Okay, so he wrote what is called the Archie Declarations, in which he describes the Comey memos. I guess he gave sworn testimony to D.C. Circuit Judge Boasberg that the memos were assembled by the FBI on or by May 12, 2017. So the bottom line is that the Comey memos contain a diary of the record keeping of FBI Director James Comey. Obviously, he was writing these memos because he was covering his you-know-what. The fact that he was keeping these notes at home and or he moved the memos to his home after the election is even more indication that Comey knew the operation against President Trump had the potential to go sideways. Now, CNN is trying to, through a FOIA, get the release of the Archie declarations. And I think that's the FBI agent who took over after Strzok. And he's the one that kind of spells out what the Comey memos say. And so we're waiting. I think the deadline for that is on Friday. So that's the story on that. Let's see. Here's a really interesting piece. This is, it doesn't have the source on this, but the headline is this: the FBI braces for Durham's first intel drop. No one is safe. The cartel members of the FBI who tried to illegally unseat a president of the United States are bracing for what is shaping up as a disastrous week, according to the feds, many feds. And there is a definite unrest inside the Bureau, which includes Director Christopher Wray, who reportedly is in the process of making drastic changes with high-ranking FBI personnel. It's knee-jerk week, one FBI insider said. One of those deals where you don't know if your blank is on the line next for challenging top leadership or something they may have cooked up to try to get you to leave the building. And the inference here is that people inside the FBI who've been trying to get this right and have been trying to fight what I believe Christopher Wray has continued. I think he just took the baton from James Comey and has been doing the very same thing. And so it looks as though, this is my impression from this, that Christopher Wray was getting ready to kind of purge the troublemakers. And so let me go on. The overall feeling among many top-level spooks is that no one is safe, especially those who have openly challenged the corrupt culture in the Bureau. The cause of the panic could have something to do with declassified documents that are slated to drop this week, a byproduct of U.S. Attorney John Durham's probe into the FBI and DOJ. Durham was appointed by Attorney General William Barr to investigate the role of top government officials spying on Donald Trump and his campaign. And this was written before yesterday. It says, look for the fireworks to begin Wednesday. And that's why I think the fireworks is coming. And that's, I've got so much more here for you. I will mention this one, and then I'll probably save the other one for the other side of the break. Mark Meadows has gone around Director FBI. He's frustrated with him, impatient, because he's been stonewalling the release of lots of important information. And in a letter addressed to Attorney General William Barr and to the Inspector General Horowitz, Meadows has pushed for the unredacted release of 5 pages related to British ex-spy Christopher Steele, who was the one that compiled the unverified dossier. Unverified sounds kind of innocent. The tabloid made-up dossier that was so damning to President Trump, that accused him of being a Russian asset, accused him of cooperating with them, accused them of all kinds of sexual deviancy. It was just amazing. And so Meadows is citing a Freedom of Information Act legal battle over disclosure of documents from Deputy Assistant Secretary of State Kathleen Kavalik. It followed her meeting with Steele on October 11th, 10 days before the first page warrant application was submitted. Let's see if I can make this simple. It's really not easy to make it simple. Basically, Congressman Meadow was claiming that these notes show that they knew that Christopher Steele's work was not reliable and that he was wanted desperate to destroy Donald Trump. That was his instructions from the Clinton campaign and the DNC, and that those memos have been protected by the FBI. That's kind of the bottom line of it. So Mark Meadows is going around the FBI director to try to get other ways of getting those memos released. We'll see. I'm telling you, there's a lot of information that's going to drop.
He who shuts his ear to the cry of the poor will also cry himself and not be answered. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. At least 65 people are dead following an attack by Boko Haram on a funeral gathering in northeastern Nigeria, according to local officials. The attack occurred Saturday, July 27th, during a funeral in the Ngazi district near the Borno state capital of Maiduguri. 10 people were critically wounded and are being treated at an area hospital. Once again, however, the talking snake media is silent. Why don't they care that innocent Nigerian Christians are being slain at genocidal proportions by Muslim terrorists? Does the American media have a jihadi privilege problem?
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Truth for Youth Bible Week is coming. Beginning next week, one free Bible will be given to each young person who promises to pass it on to a friend.
The Truth for Youth Bible inspired me and led me to Christ.
I read some of the comics and they really touched my heart. Thank you so much for the Truth for Youth Bible.
Partner with American Family Radio and Truth for Youth International to spread the Word of God among young people across the country. Listen next week for more information or visit truthforyouth.com.
My life is changed forever.
Washington Watch advances a culture where human life is valued and religious liberty thrives.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins, host of Washington Watch, right here on the American Family Radio Network, inviting you to join us each weekend for the weekend edition of Washington Watch for the latest from our nation's capital on what is happening as it pertains to faith, family, and freedom. You'll hear from policymakers, congressional leaders, and others each day, 4 p.m. Central Time. Be there.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. The country of Jamaica is dealing with skyrocketing violence and murder rates and has decided they've hit on the solution: make it illegal for children to be spanked. They say spanking teaches children that violence is okay. But it's the other way around. If a child gets spanked because he hits his brother on the head with a toy, he'll reconsider his view of violence in a hurry. Spanking that is measured, purposeful, and done in response to willful disobedience is a form of love, not abuse. Spanking is not violence, it is discipline. And according to the Bible, it is necessary. Folly is bound up in the heart of a child, Proverbs says, and the rod drives it far from him. The problem in Jamaica is not that adult criminals were spanked too much, it's that they weren't spanked enough.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Ever since President Trump took office, he has been searching largely in vain for a military leader who not only looks the part and has served in uniform with distinction, but has the vision to perform the most challenging missions confronting our nation. In Air Force Lieutenant General Stephen Quast, he has such an officer. General Quast has distinguished himself as a visionary leader on what is properly a key Trump priority: the asymmetric and growing threat posed by communist China, especially in space. He has articulated persuasively the immensely ominous implications for U.S. national and economic security, and championed measures to protect our country. Unfortunately, unless Mr. Trump acts quickly, General Quast will shortly be unwillingly retired from his service, punishment for daring to share the Commander-in-Chief's vision for a space force. He should, instead, be tasked with actualizing it. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
The U.S. placed a $1 million bounty on the head of Hamza bin Laden in February. Details of his reported death remain a mystery. John Roberts asked the president about it earlier.
Do you have any intelligence that bin Laden's son has been killed?
I don't want to comment on it. Thank you very much, everybody.
Hamza threatened revenge after Navy SEALs killed his father, al-Qaeda mastermind Osama bin Laden, in Pakistan in 2011. U.S. intelligence agencies viewed Hamza as an emerging leader of al-Qaeda who carried out the worst terrorist attack on American soil on September 11th, killing 3,000 people. After the attacks, Hamza and other al-Qaeda members fled to Iran. They were detained, but later let go. Over the years, Hamza released audio and video messages on the internet, calling on supporters to launch attacks against the U.S. and allies around the world. Hamza is thought to be 30 years old. The U.S. government says he married the daughter of a senior al-Qaeda leader who was indicted by a federal grand jury for his role in the 1998 terrorist attacks against two U.S. embassies in Tanzania and Kenya. A video of Hamza's wedding was found in Osama bin Laden's compound by the SEALs in the Pakistan raid and released by the CIA 2 years ago. Other documents seized indicated bin Laden was grooming his son to replace him as leader of al-Qaeda. Navy SEALs killed another son, Khalid, during the raid in addition to his father. The CIA continues to hunt down the current leader of al-Qaeda, Ayman al-Zawahiri. And al-Qaeda remains a resilient terrorist group today in Afghanistan.
That was Lucas Thomason. I told you there was a lot of news today. And interestingly enough, last night in the debate, Tulsi Gabbard made the statement that al-Qaeda was stronger than it ever has been, and President Trump is supporting them. Basically, that's what she said. And I found it really ironic, since this morning we learned that, his son has been killed, and we think that the president did not, you could hear him, he did not want to comment on it, but we think that we had something to do with his death, and he was the heir apparent in al-Qaeda. So the irony of it, I won't say any more, because honestly, I can't say what I don't know. I want to go back to the information that's coming out this week because there's so much of it. Now, this is from True Pundit. True Pundit, my understanding is, I can't confirm this either. Honestly, I don't know. If I did, I would tell you that this is ex-FBI agents who are kind of like the opposition to the current leadership. And this is, they publish stuff all the time, and this is what they are saying right now. Here's the headline. Six U.S. agencies conspired to illegally wiretap Trump. British intel used as an NSA front to spy on the campaign. And I'm going to give you this story because I'll try to make this as clear as I possibly can. From the beginning, it was a setup to find dirt on Trump campaign insiders and, if possible, to topple Donald Trump's presidential aspirations. Before and after the 2016 election, and while this operation had many moving parts and alternating players, the mission to unseat Trump never changed, and it remains ongoing. Paul Manafort was wiretapped. Carter Page was wiretapped. Donald Trump Jr. was wiretapped. Jared Kushner was wiretapped. General Michael Flynn was wiretapped. And likely, there were others. Most of it was very illegal. According to federal law enforcement sources who were blowing the whistle on a sweeping scheme to undermine the executive branch and the electorate's choice for the President of the United States. And according to high-ranking FBI sources, the Bureau played a definitive role in plotting this sweeping privacy breach. But the FBI had much help from NSA, CIA, and Office of the Director of National Intelligence. Treasury Financial Crimes Division under DHS and Justice Department federal law enforcement sources confirmed what they just wrote, that they had a lot of help. The deep state caretakers involved are familiar names. James Comey, FBI. John Brennan, CIA. James Clapper, ODNI, that was Defense Intelligence, or National Intelligence, and that's the role that the lawmaker from Texas is getting ready to take over. Loretta Lynch, DOJ, Jay Johnson, DHS, Admiral Michael Rogers, NSA, and then director of GCHQ, that's the British Forces, Robert Hannigan, who has since resigned from the esteemed British spy agency. Okay, so now listen to this. I want to make this as clear as I can. Basically, all of these guys were involved in this attempt to take down the presidency of Donald Trump before and after he was elected. President Barack Obama's White House, too, could be implicated. And I think that's an evolving story where they have to make sure they have their ducks in a row before they can say too much. And here's what we know. Six U.S. intelligence agencies created a stealth task force spearheaded by CIA's John Brennan to run domestic surveillance on Trump associates and possibly Trump himself. To feign ignorance and seemingly operate within U.S. laws, the agencies freelanced the wiretapping of Trump associates to the British spy agency GCHQ. The decision to insert GCHQ as a backdoor to eavesdrop was sparked by the denial of two FISA court warrant applications filed by the FBI to seek wiretaps of taps of Trump associates. So they went into the FISA court, they tried to get permission to do this, and they were refused. So they chose to work with GCHQ, the British spy agency. They did not work from London or the UK. GCHQ worked from NSA's headquarters in Fort Meade, Maryland, with direct NSA supervision and guidance to conduct sweeping surveillance on Trump associates. The illegal wiretaps were initiated months before controversial Trump dossier compiled by former British spy Christopher Steele. The Justice Department and the FBI set up the meeting at Trump's... I got to do that more slowly. I've said this before, but it needs to be emphasized. The Justice Department under Obama and the FBI under Comey and Obama set up the meeting at Trump Tower between Trump Jr., Manafort, Kushner, with controversial Russian officials to make Trump associates appear compromised. Following the Trump Tower sit-down, the British intelligence agency began digitally wiretapping Manafort, Trump Jr., and Kushner. I say that was their excuse. They set this meeting up with this Russian lawyer to make it seem as though they were up to that the Trump people and family were up to no good, and that gave them the permission to then go after them. After the concocted meeting by the deep state, the British spy agency could officially justify wiretapping Trump associates as an intelligence front for NSA. Because the Russian lawyer at the meeting, Natalia Veselnitskaya, was considered an international security risk, and prior to the June sit-down, was not even allowed to enter the United States or the UK. Now, I'm going to kind of see if I can paraphrase this next part. What happened was Veselnitskaya was, as they just said, not allowed to enter the United States. She was banned because they thought she was, her ties to the Russian government or whatever her ties were in Russia, they were nefarious. But what happened was someone reached out from the State Department and gave her special permission to come in. Preet Bharara, you maybe remember him because he hates President Trump. He ended up being fired by President Trump as a U.S. attorney. He signed off on a rare visa allowing Mrs. Veselnitskaya into the United States just for that period of time. So somehow this nefarious person who's supposed to be connected to the Kremlin was given a special visa to come into the country and go to Trump Tower and meet with Don Jr. and the rest of them. But Don Jr. and the rest of them didn't know. They didn't know much about her. This information about her coming and about meeting with her came from someone that President Trump had some dealings with in Russia a number of years ago. It was kind of a back channel. This woman's coming in. She wants to talk to you. And she has information about Hillary Clinton. That was the guise of the meeting. But, of course, then in the meeting, she had nothing. She just wanted to talk about Russian adoption. And you may recall that Don Jr. was really frustrated. He said, this meeting is nothing. You know, just get me out of it. But this whole thing they set up as some sort of a proof that the Trump team was colluding with Russians when it was the U.S. intelligence forces and the Obama State Department and FBI setting up the meeting, unbeknownst to Don Jr. and the rest of them. So federal law enforcement sources say Bharara, that's Preet Bharara, was simply following orders of Attorney General Lynch, who lobbied the State Department to issue the disavowed Russian a B-1, B-2 non-immigrant visa. This permitted Veselnitskaya entering to the United States for the sole purpose of entrapping Trump associates to use as fuel to commission wiretaps. And we think that Veselnitskaya may have been paid by the U.S. government. And so intelligence garnered from the British eavesdropping, which again was merely a front for the NSA, was then used in August 2016 to secure a legitimate FISA warrant on Manafort, Trump Jr., and Kushner. This is an incredible story, and of course, I think we will put this on our Facebook page. Again, it's True Pundit. Six U.S. agencies conspired to illegally wiretrap Trump. That's the first part of it. And I just think you should, of course you should know about that. And so that's just part of what's going on today. Yes, okay, so usually on Thursdays we do Facebook and email and open the phone lines, but I don't have time to open the phone lines, and I wanted to make sure I was able to share all of that important information with you. But I have a few things from you that I'd like to share that have come in, and I always appreciate your comments. And again, I read almost all of them as much as I possibly can. I don't personally reply, but I read them, I listen to what you say, and I try to reply on the air as often as I can. This is from Stan. Stan says, as a millennial, your show makes me feel less alone and way ahead of the curve compared to my peers. I try to educate people, millennials my age, especially apathetic conservative Christians, on the importance of voting and staying informed, and most of my information comes from you. Thank you again for all you do. God bless you and keep you and your loved ones safe. Thank you so much, Stan. That's beautiful. Other things were said there, but I won't repeat them because I can't say everything. This is from Paul in Indiana, and he says, I'm a conservative from Indiana. I don't think Dan Coats is a bad guy. He says that he basically says that he does believe Russia is our enemy at every turn. I disagree with him about that, but he's much better than Richard Lugar. And Paul's responding to my criticisms of former Congressman Dan Coats. Paul, I would just say this. Yes, he's better than Richard Lugar. That's for sure. And I think Dan, in his affect, is a nice guy. I've interacted with him. There's no question about that. The problem is, you heard me say this with a caller yesterday who was cannot stand Trump and he hates his manner. And my point to him was, it doesn't, what they say and their bombast or their niceness really has nothing to do with what they actually do. Look at what they actually do. My problem is not with Dan Coats' niceness. It's with what he actually does. And as the director of national intelligence, he covered for this fraudulent story and even mocked his own president at that, I think it's the Aspen Festival. We played that clip, I'm sure you heard it, where he's asked about Putin meeting with the president. And he laughed at the president and said, well, isn't that special? And I think that's inappropriate. I think it's disrespectful. And I don't care how nice he might be in his manner. I just think he was undermining his boss, and I think that's a serious problem. So that's my criticisms. This is from Atosin, who says, I listened this morning to your response to Mayor Pete's factual statement about so-called Christian conservatives blocking the 15-minute minimum wage bill, and your response was very disappointing. Can you please put your Christian faith above politics? Is the current minimum wage helpful to the lower class who are struggling and having to work multiple jobs to survive? When last was the minimum wage raised with inflation, cost of living increases every year? Please stand for the truth at all times as you will one day answer to God. Being a Republican will not get you into heaven. Only your Christian faith will. Well, that's true, Tosin. I don't disagree with you at all. And I certainly do believe in putting my Christian faith above my political leanings. It's a constant, it's a challenge, isn't it, for all of us to do that. And also to discern which things are just our personal opinions and which are, you know, opinions that really have biblical foundation. But on this one, Tosin, you make it sound as though anybody that opposes this $15 minimum wage is somehow unchristian. And I don't think you heard the other part of what I said, because I think this is important. Don't you think it's kind of concerning that these companies, you know, these companies, smaller companies especially, are run by people who have families, and they have to make a living themselves to pay for their children and supply and take care of their families. And if they are forced to pay a higher hourly wage to their workers, to their minimum wage workers, then they're going to have to let other people go. So whereas you may advocate for a higher minimum wage, then other people that you know may lose their jobs because the people that run those businesses can't afford to pay what's being dictated to them, to all their employees. So they're putting in automatic stations, you know, computerized, ordering, and doing away with jobs for people. So you have to think about what compassion really means. It isn't exactly what you think it does. And I also, the point I'm trying to make is that's an entry-level job. I hope that you don't think that that's the it for you, that you would work at McDonald's for minimum wage and that would be your career for the rest of your life. It's meant to be an entry-level job. It's meant to be a way of teaching you and training you so that you can better yourself and learn to earn more money in a more responsible, challenging job. So, Tosin, it's just common sense, and I think that common sense comes out of Scripture. And that's all I have time to say about it right now. All right, so I'd love to hear from you. Keep those letters and Facebook content coming. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.